morning, Lord willing, we're going to get started into the first chapter of the Song of Solomon. Before we get started, I'd just like to express my appreciation to all of you. People have just come up to me and told me that they are enjoying the class and that they're enjoying the study, and we really haven't even studied much, but that's encouraging to the teacher. Some of you, Connie and Dutch, have brought me commentaries that you don't know how helpful those are, and I know that sometimes the first reading of them can be scary about some of the topics, but you know, the more that you read them, and I got myself a commentary, and then I got the greatest commentary, I got God's Word to go by, and it's just been a big help. And the only thing that I want to do from our study is, A, I don't want to misspeak God's Word to you. That would never be my intention. And two, I want us to walk away from this study stronger. And by stronger, we know that this is a love story, and it's about a man and a woman, and it's about marriage. And we live in a time where over 50% of marriages fail. And I told Lisa, I said, you know, I said, I hate to say this because I've read this whole book, but I've just been studying chapter one because there's no sense in getting ahead of myself, because I want to be able to deliver this in the best way that God would intend for it. I said, but I can really see where we're very, very fortunate. God, do we understand the great blessing that God has given us to have a mate, to have a spouse? You know, we've mentioned this before, that when God created man, he saw that he needed some help. It wasn't so much that he needed help, although you women may disagree with that. You help us tremendously, and you probably do not get thanks nearly enough. But he saw that man needed a companion. He needed somebody to go through this life with. And I was thinking about marriage and thinking about the individuals here at the congregation, and I thought, well, Clark and Megan, they're the newest newlyweds that I can think of that we have. Just celebrated 1 year in September. And I was trying to think, well, who might be the oldest and longest marriage? And I was asking Frances, and she said 60 plus years for her and Junior. So, I mean, you have 1 year and then you have 60 years. There's a vast amount of things that's going to happen between that amount of years. Lisa and I, in November, celebrated 24 years, and they flew by really, really fast. And I'd like to think that both of us, mainly me, have grown in those 24 years. This book, The Song of Solomon, it's mainly about the woman. Not a whole lot of books in the Bible that are just, you know, basically talking about the woman, but this one talks mainly, the main character is the Shulamite, the woman. So, you know, the book of Ruth is about a couple of women. So this is a good, insightful study. Proverbs was talking about the young man and how he should live a lot of times. But then Proverbs 31, you had the virtuous woman. Well, I think that kind of jumps right in here to the Song of Solomon, because this lady here, she's a super catch. She's a good catch.
You know, Doug, this morning when I was reading and studying the Wednesday night lesson, over in Malachi, the 15th chapter, and I told Shirley this morning, I said, do you know why God says for you not to leave the wife of your youth and to keep it? And I was reading it in Malachi 2, verse 15. Has not the Lord made them one in flesh and spirit? They are his. And why one? Because he seeks godly offspring. So guard yourselves in your spirit and do not break faith with the wife of your youth. And that just jumped out and grabbed me. I said, boy, you know, if you're the wife of your youth and celebrate and keep that which God has joined together, let no man put asunder. And then you come here and it says, this is why godly offspring. So you see the plan that God put into effect for all of us is to have godly offspring, to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Train them up in the way that should go, and when they're old, they will not depart from it.
We are a tremendous example to the world, but also to our children. Far too often in the world today, children grow up in a broken home with one parent. But Christians that stay together, they fight through the hard times. They fight, you know, it's not always going to be about that first year of marriage where it's all bliss. You're going to face trials. You're going to face tribulations. One of the commentaries that I talked about, I think it's the one that Dutch gave me, it talks about the different, 100 men were asked, you know, what's the hardest vow to keep? And 19% were the sickness and health. 19% were, I forget what the other one, but the last one was to be only to your mate. Only, you know, you, that would single it out. You know, you're not going to have be able to love any other. Yeah. And that was where they were having the trouble. And that's where the world has the trouble. When I was reading this, and I got up this morning and I read it again, because Donnie's reading it like far more often, I said, I got to get in there and catch up with him. But I thought about what you said in the very first study, and it rings true in this, and Donnie brought out a great point. He said it stirred in his mind back when he and Sherry first met. As we start into this chapter, I'd like all of you, some of you may be a little harder than others, because as I mentioned, some have been married a short time and some have been married a long time. But I want you to try to, as we go in here, try to put yourself back into that dating era. Put yourself into that place when you first started falling in love. When you first knew. You know, that's kind of something that happens to us over time. We forget about that. Told Lisa this morning, I said, the more I study this, the more I'm reminded of things that I forgot about. And this is an awesome story for us. It's an awesome lesson for us. As Donnie pointed out, you know, God expects us to stay married. It's a good example to others for us to be married. God created this as a gift. And all the things that fall within the marriage guidelines are a gift from God. And He expects us to practice them. He expects us to live them. And He expects us to stay together. With that being said, let's go ahead and start in chapter 1. Solomon's Song of Songs. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfume. Your name is like perfume poured out. No wonder the maidens love you. Take me away with you. Let us hurry. Let the king bring me into his chambers. We rejoice and delight in you. We will praise your love more than wine. How right they are to adore you. Dark am I, yet lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, dark like the tents of Kedar, like the tent curtains of Solomon. Do not stare at me because I am dark, because I am darkened by the sun. My mother's sons were angry with me and made me take care of the vineyard. My own vineyard I have neglected. Let's stop right there. That's the first six verses. Okay. Verse 1, you know, we have discussed this in the authorship. It leads us to believe that this is Solomon's Testament, Solomon's Song. Song of Songs is the greatest song that is written. Poems in here. There are a lot of our songs are made up of odes or poems about people. Solomon was said to have written some 1,005. And so, you know, here he just, it's either saying this is Solomon's song, or this is for Solomon, this is about Solomon. But whatever, you know, Solomon's name is mentioned here. and it is the Song of Songs. It is the song above all other songs. Just as Jesus is King of Kings, Lord of Lords, you know, these things are, there's just, I don't know that there's a better song been written. Sorry to Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, and all of them. I just don't know. They've got some great ones. And there's some new guys out there right now that's got some wonderful songs. I can't help it. Those jewelry commercials, those songs keep ringing into my head as I'm reading this, you know. But they know every kiss begins with K, okay? They know how that to get to you. He says, or it says here in verse 2, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. For your love is more delightful than wine. And the kiss is a universal way of expressing desire, love, appreciation. Now that it comes in that time of memory. Can you remember your first kiss? Not necessarily the first kiss with your spouse, but, you know, we all have the first kiss. Remember the nerves? Remember, you know, am I supposed to kiss? Are my eyes supposed to be open? You know, whatever. That, this is an expression. And so, you know, we're thinking back of that first kiss. Now, then think of that first kiss with the one that later became your spouse. At the time, you may not have known it, that that was going to be your spouse. But after that, you somehow sense a difference, maybe. She says, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. He's intoxicating. You know, wine is intoxicating. Your kiss takes my breath away. You know, she is praising the feeling that she gets from this man. In marriage, in that first year, you know, first year you do everything right. Second year you start to struggle sometimes. Binoculars, right, Dutch?
Right. Don't
make that mistake. He just made a valid point. The first year is not without mistakes. The 24th year is not without mistakes. And probably the 62nd year is not without mistakes. It is a constant learning. But just think back, you know, to that first kiss. How intoxicated you felt. Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfume. Okay, this man didn't stink. He had a good appeal to him.
All senses were working at their maximum.
Exactly.
At that point in your life, every sense, all your five senses are working at a maximum. You want to hear the
every word.
It's at work. And just the smell of, and it doesn't have to be some kind of big exotic perfume.
You got it.
That smell will linger and stay with you just where you've touched your mate. And it's very obvious that though the years have been many, I still know that fragrance. I still know that the words. I still, whatever she says, still hangs in my mind, and it has always done such. The things that you remember, that's the best time of your life, and it continues to go with you through life, and it lasts. There was a couple on television that had been married, I believe it was 70 years, you know, but it was still with them. It stayed with them. It was truly God's gift to them, and though they persevered, then you go, everybody goes through problems. But you never forget what you have and you protect it and go on. It's very important to protect.
Love is like a fire, all right? You've got to kindle it. You've got to keep it going. You've got to stoke the fire. You've got to add fuel to the fire. If you neglect any of those things, what's going to happen to the fire?
It goes out.
You know, I can remember forbidding my mother from washing my clothes because I may have hugged my girlfriend and her perfume may have been on there, but that smell was still there. Okay, don't wash that, Mama, you're crazy. You know, you can't do that. But that smell was there, you know, so she's saying his fragrance is attractive to her. She loves his smell. As Donnie pointed out, it doesn't have to be an exotic perfume. I can remember when Lisa and I were dating, I wore cologne and she wore perfume. After we were married, we realized we were having headaches all the time. We can't wear perfume and cologne, you know. But there's still, you use the same kind of soap. You use the same kind of laundry detergent. Your body puts off a musk of its own. Those entangle together to give you your aroma. Hopefully it's a pleasing aroma. But that is the smell that you can attribute to your spouse. That is the smell of my husband or my wife. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be the henna blossoms. It doesn't necessarily have to be polo.
Well, when your spouse is around, it awakens your senses. You know, though it's just a regular run-of-the-mill day, or just another day, when your spouse is around you, it awakens the senses. They're there, and they become a part of enjoyment of life. Just to know that your spouse is there with you through thick and thin, they're there.
Yes, and you bring up a really good point about those five senses. Think back to when you first were dating. You heard every word she said. Now it got, okay, maybe most every word. But you had his attention, okay? Not for everybody, but we wanted to hear them talk. We wanted to smell them. We wanted to taste their kiss. We wanted to feel their touch. We wanted to see them. We wanted to behold them. We got to keep that alive in year 10, 15, 20, 25, and on down there. Life gets in the way sometimes. But we need to be reminded, and this is a beautiful reminder in this psalm, of how to keep it, that spark alive, how to keep that fire burning. And Donnie pointed out greatly with the senses, you know, we're in tune to our mate. We're in tune to that person that we're in love with. Just seems like after we say I do, we don't no more. You know, we don't pay attention to the things because, you know, we have work and kids come along and the trials of life can get in the way. But at the end of the day, you know, when all that is said and done, there's that quiet time. That time to just the two of you to connect, to talk, to speak. Be each other's perfume. Be that attractiveness that you remembered from your youth.
Your marriage teaches you that even though it gets rough going, and that for us, we had three little children that was 2 years apart. And sure, it worked very hard. Of course, we all worked very hard. But it was such a job raising three little children and trying to take care of the household, trying to take care of the children, and it seemed as though life was passing her by because we talked about that. And I told her, I said, life's not passing you by. You're not missing anything. I said, I wished I could stay here with you. But we went through those times. And when you get to the other side of those times, you look back and you say, hey, they weren't that bad, you know. I thought they were, but they're not that bad. And that we made it through, and look how much better off we are. Now we've got six grandchildren, and you know what I'm saying? It all started, and you look at it, and you say, oh, you can live through it. You can make it. It teaches you to not give up. You keep looking for the goal, and the goal is to get your soul there.
Right.
It teaches you to persevere, to go on, to do what the Lord teaches you, that unless he talks about purifying you like silver and like gold, going through the heat of, you go through the heat of life, and you, through his love, and loving him and seeking him daily, you make it through, and you're purified.
Purified.
He purifies you through the trials of this life. And he tells you, your wife of your youth will go through with you.
Right.
And be there beside you. You become one flesh.
Trace Atkins has a song, you're going to miss this. You know, starts out with the girl, she's can't wait to get out of school. He says, well, you're going to miss this. And then she gets married and can't wait for to have children. He said, well, you're going to miss this. They have children and the kids are crying, the washer's leaking out and the plumber's there, and she's like, I'm so sorry about all this. And he said, oh, don't worry, I got kids of my own. He said, believe me, you're going to miss this. The toughest times we seem to go through are the times that we look back at and we say, man, I missed that. Those are the times that you do the thing Donnie's talking about. That's the times you bond. That's the times that you are woven together.
I want to tell you this, Doug. Sherry and I, we lived in a house trailer. An old trailer that was made in El Paso, Texas, so it was cold in the winter. But anyway, we had a leak in the electric water heater. Well, the element went out. And I told Sherry, I said, I can't find where to turn the water off. But I'm fast enough that I can take that hose out. Now, this is when I was 18 years old. I said, I'm fast enough, I can take that element out and put it back in without leaking too much water.
If you've ever changed an element, you know.
Guess what? We have water in the floor about that deep.
But you laughed about it, didn't you? Yeah. After you cleaned it up.
Sherry told me, he said, you know better than that. I said, I thought I was fast
enough. Oh, good. You're going to tie in with this next verse. It says, your name is like perfume poured out. Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes. He smells attractive. Your name is like a perfume poured out. You're well known. You're attractive to the people. No wonder the maidens love you. Donnie's an excellent plumber. See, he's. But no, back to her talking about him. She's talking about, you know, his name is like a perfume. A perfume is a sweet aroma. It's a good smell. It's not a bad odor. It's not something that turns you off. So his name is good. He's respected. He has a great reputation. You know, we want to try to find a spouse that other people think highly of. A lot of times you'll hear people say, you know, it doesn't matter what you think of him. It's what I think of him. And on the surface, that's pretty much true. But, you know, you have to remember, sometimes people know things that you don't about someone. They may know a history. One of the commentaries, the one that I think that Dutch and I are sharing, said, you know, a lot of times a girl will say, but, you know, you don't see any what I see in. Well, the guy made a great point. Said, do you see that because you want to see that? The other people see it because don't see it because it's not there. You know, let that be a warning to you. If you're seeing something that nobody else can see, you might want to investigate closely, because I don't know that you're that specially talented that you're the only one that sees it. Not saying that other people could have misgivings. They may not know that person very well. I'm just saying you might want to investigate that a little bit. But we want to find someone that is well-respected. Someone who's well-respected in the community most likely is going to be a respecter in unity, meaning when he's in the relationship, you're not going to have to worry about cheating, beating. Today, the biggest thing seems to be the computer and people getting on the computer and finding illicit things to look at. And how many marriages has that cost? You know, and that stuff isn't even real. That's cyberspace, and people give up their matrimony because of cyberspace. So, you know, you want to find someone who is very well respected, has a good reputation. No wonder the maidens love you. Listen, he's a catch. It's not like, you know, she's doing him a favor by casting him an eye that way. There are others out there that are looking towards him. And if she doesn't seize that opportunity, you know, they're going to speak highly of her a little bit later down here, but, you know, they're saying, you know, if you don't want him, we'll take him off your hands. You know, it's not like you're the only fish in the sea. So, you know, she's aware of the fact that this is an attractive man. This is a good man. He appears to be the total package. He appears to have the good looks, has the charm, and he has the heart. He has the sincerity. These are all good qualities in a spouse that one should try to look for. Any questions or comments so far?
I heard this remark one time, Doug, and it was about a couple and their connection with one another. That's very important, obviously, for the husband and wife to be solely connected to one another. And there was, you know, kids, and there was family, and there was people. They were around people all the time. The wife became frustrated with that, you know, and she thought she was not able to share with her husband. And he said, "Honey, I feel like we're always alone." In other words, that doesn't matter how many people you're around.
Right.
You and your wife, even though you may be separated across the room from one another, you look at each other and you know that you have that connection. But you're always, you know, honey, I feel like we're always connected. We're always alone. No matter how many other people are around you, how many other distractions you have.
This is our world.
Yeah.
You know, the other people just get to live in it. That's, you know, and we'll get down here to it, but, you know, we're talking about his appearance and things, and you know, a little bit later here we're going to talk about her appearance. And I don't know, this may sound silly or whatever, but in this study I guess I've had to get in touch with a side of me that, you know, I don't show all the time or whatever, but it's almost like, you remember when you first saw your spouse, and it's like we never change. Like, I'm hoping Lisa sees the skinny guy that had a full head of hair, you know, and not the guy that's got two or three chins, a way lot less hair on the back. I hope that's, because I feel like every time I look at her, I see that young girl that's the girl I fell in love with. It doesn't change. And I think that maybe that's the beauty of love. It said that beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And it's almost like, you know, of course we all change. We get older, and gravity takes effect, and we learn to let ourselves go sometimes. But that doesn't change the heart. It doesn't change, you know, what you see. One of men's biggest problems is we don't know how to compliment. We don't know how to say sometimes the right things, or maybe it's, we don't know when to say them. As we'll find out as we continue on, there's a good example here of what to say and when to say it. And one of the keys to keeping that spark in a marriage is to say these things on a daily basis. Says, how right they are to adore you, the latter part of verse 4. She's acknowledging here, you know, this is a special person. He's a special man. She says in verse 5, dark am I yet lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, dark like the tents of Kedar, like the tent curtains of Solomon. Back in this time, we have to remember that tan was out, pale was in. Today, we want to be tall, dark, and handsome. We want to be slim and tan, slim and trim and tan. Well, back in this time, the lighter, the fairer the skin, the higher society you appeared to come from. You were not out working in the fields. And so the paleness was in. And I was telling Lisa, I remember watching the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston, and that was one of the things that Moses' wife had said in the movie, whether or not it was said, you know, she was asking about the queen should, her skin is fairer than mine. You know, she was looking down at herself because she had dark skin because she worked. You know, she tended her father's flock. She helped work on the farm, whatever they did. So she was a worker. And the queen, you know, she did nothing but have people fan her and whatever. So, you know, she probably didn't see much of the light of day because they always had an umbrella over to keep the skin fair and whatnot. So, of course, I don't know if that's Hollywood or what, but this kind of drives home that point a little bit that the fair skin this was in. So she's pointing out here, she's not saying I'm a supermodel. She's saying I'm lovely. She appears to be okay with the fact of how she looks. You know, she might be a little bit as she might compare herself to some of these others that maybe the daughters of Jerusalem, maybe those that are not working, maybe some of these people are from higher society. There's some thoughts out there that maybe if this is indeed Solomon, and maybe it's his first wife, maybe it's the first true love that he had, maybe some of it alludes to the point that maybe he already had some wives and some concubines, but they were gifts and things that would have happened as, you know, a king, you know, being given this and that. Maybe this was his first true love. I don't know the answer to that. This person to me seems to be in love, and maybe she is saying to those people, you know, the reason I'm dark-skinned is because I work for a living. My brothers, they made me work in in the vineyard, the family vineyard. She had to be out there and doing the family business. But she compares her skin to the tents of Kedar. They were made out of a goat hair that was extremely, extremely black. Very, very highly sought after, actually. But it was extremely dark. So she was in the sun a lot. You know, she was probably working more than an 8-hour day. They didn't have sunscreen back in those times. They probably had oils and things that they used, but probably not the sun-blocking agents of today. But anyways, what I think we need to look at here is that, you know, she seems kind of comfortable in her own skin, no pun intended, you know, talking about the tan, but she realizes that I'm not a beast to look at, but I'm also not that supermodel. I'm not, you know, a fair skin. I'm not high society. Kind of what you see is what you get. And she talks about the fact that I work. I haven't had time to take care of my vineyard. Talking about her own body. She is not able to do the things that others are. You know, we see people on TV. You ever see those magazines where they show them without makeup? They're not quite as radiant as what you see on TV. And one of the commentaries that I'm reading was talking about the fact that, you know, look at your wife or look at your husband. If they had 4 hours each day to sit there and be pampered, you know, having someone do their makeup, do all the stuff, imagine what they might look like. You know, this is reality. This is reality. So what you see on TV is not real. But that beauty that you behold on a daily basis, that's the real thing. No, sometimes I just think a woman shouldn't wear makeup. Let your true beauty shine. Sometimes I think I need makeup. Cover up what I've got, you know. Anyway, this is as far as time's going to allow us to go. Is there any questions as we continue conclude through verse 6? We'll pick up with verse 7. She's going to go looking after her lover and see if she can find where he's at. Anything else? Thank you so much for your attention.